Hello and welcome to What Do You Do? A music industry podcast. My name is Orna Lyons and I work in the music industry, and in this series I'm going to be chatting to people in all different types of jobs. This is our very first episode and I'm so excited to be chatting to Elliot Andrews. Elliot is a session musician, a promoter's rep and a tour manager, so he has so much experience to share. So without further ado, here's my chat with Elliot. Elliot Andrews, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So the first question we like to ask everybody is, what do you do?
What do I do? That is a good question. I am a tour manager primarily, but I also work on shows with Metropolis, who are a promoter. So I'm a show rep or promoter rep. And I'm also a session drummer, but not as much as I used to be. But I still would like to call myself that.
But that's where you started out, right?
That is where I started, exactly. That's where I started in all of this madness, yeah.
This mad industry. So you went to BIM, right?
Correct, yep, BIM in Brighton. Yeah, a year after it opened. It
was, oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was there when it was still a building site and still kind of getting going, but yeah.
What is BIM like? Because I kind of imagine it to be a little bit like Fame the Musical, but I'm sure...
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. There were people cartwheeling around the corridors, but I mean, it's a good place to go. You know, it was at the time it was good.
And what did you study?
I studied drums.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, drums in the first year. And then in order to get the degree, it became professional modern music, but it was drums really. And yeah, with a few essays about bands and whatnot at the end, just to make it a degree. But it, yeah, I mean, it was really good for drums.
So have you ever said to someone, I have a degree in drumming?
Yeah.
Really?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, the certificate doesn't say that, but I'd like to think it is in drums, really.
That's pretty much the coolest degree anyone could possibly have.
Yeah, I think so.
And so when you were in BIM, did you know exactly what you wanted to do? Or even before that, before you went to BIM, obviously music was your passion, but how did you decide, okay, I'm definitely going to pursue this. This isn't just a hobby. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think I knew from a very young age, really. I knew from when I was like 8 years old. That's what I wanted to do. At seven or eight, I wanted to play drums. My granddad bought me a drum kit and was like, yeah, listen to Buddy Rich and gave me a load of CDs. And yeah, I mean, I couldn't play jazz and I still can't really play jazz, but I loved the drums and I loved playing, and that was it, really. And then I sort of joined a band when I was in high school.
Classic.
And that was it, really. I kind of enjoyed it, and it was all just kind of at the time when I was really getting into music and really enjoying bands, and like that became a thing. And they, you know, it was
like,
did you gig
much as a band as a teenager?
Yeah, we did. We played loads of gigs. Yeah, we were playing like every Friday in our local pub and down on the pool keys on the seafront, you know, playing like, yeah, covers. Blue Riff, we were called. It was not the best name, but
yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it was all right. It was good, you know. It's a real mix of music, but it was great, and that kind of gave me the bug, really. And that was it. I decided that I wanted to keep doing it and take it further and keep performing. And
how did that band break up, or was that when you went to BIM?
Yeah, that was when I went to BIM, really, because it sort of, yeah, that was it. I saw an advert in a drum magazine and for BIM, and it was like, right, okay, that seems like a thing to do, you know, to further it. And went and had a meeting there and a sort of audition, and yeah, we're like, yeah, come back next. It was, I just missed it when it opened, and they were like, come back next year. So I had a year out and sort of studied and learnt to read a bit of music, because I didn't know anything. I taught myself, so I had a load of bad techniques, and like hung around with a few drummers in Poole in Dorset, and there was one guy that was really cool, and he sort of, yeah, he taught me a few bits and bobs and like got rid of my bad techniques.
So was it a bit like Whiplash when you were at BIM? Like, was it,
yeah, well, the times
was
it
intense?
Yeah, definitely.
How does a drumming class work? Like, can you do multiple drummers or in a class?
Yeah, we were like 10 of us or 12 of us sat behind electronic drum kits all with headphones on, and then yeah, we'd all sort of, then there was a real drum kit at the front that the teachers would sit on and yeah, show us what to do. And yeah, it was a lot of talking more than playing.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was good, you know. Yeah. It was good.
And did you learn other things about the music industry when you were there? Was it more music based or was it a mishmash?
Yeah, it was a mishmash. I mean, I think like in the second and third year it was that, but also as well it was like applying yourself and just getting out there, and like I you know, the rehearsal studios and stuff. That was a big part of my education, like going to the music studio. There was this place called Ground Zero, it's Brighton Electric now, and I'd go there and I end up working there and like booking bands and then end up working in the studio. And that was a real like education, I think. That was kind of getting, you know, getting stuck in there and learning about studios and then starting to record with bands properly. And
so you were kind of simultaneously, you were learning the drums as a practice, but you were also learning a bit about the industry as you went along, learning about recording, because you've obviously
played for people, but you've also played on recordings and you write songs as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that sort of playing with bands and stuff came a bit later after BIM, but my first sort of session was big session. Well, big session was Maccabees. That was like after I graduated, I did their first album because I was friends with them from the studio and their drummer. We were good friends.
Was that from BIM? You met them there?
I suppose it was a bit of both. Their manager, she worked at BIM on the reception. She's now become a big promoter and been quite a part of my life in another way, but she in the promotion side of things. But she also managed the Maccabees at that point and put me in touch, and it just kind of worked out because I'd been to a few shows and like helped them carry their gear. And then
it's amazing how those things work out. And I know quite a few musicians from BIM, and you come across so many session musicians who've played together, and it really does seem like a bit of a family. And even though it might not guarantee you a job straight away when you leave, it feels like for years people are like, you know, they can be in well into their 30s and they're like, oh yeah, I've got a mate, I played with him in BIM, let me reach out to him. It seems like a really nice network that you kind of always have.
I think that's very true. I think that really is a good point. Like, you know, I still speak to a lot of the guys, and you know, when I was really playing a lot, we'd still, you know, you'd get asked, and if something came up, you'd think of someone, you know, and yeah, you'd just put someone up that you went to college with who you knew was good, you know. So yeah, you're right. I think it is like a big family, but it's a lot like that in music anyway, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
I think BIM just gives you that initial network of when you come out of university thinking, what the hell do I find a job?
Yeah.
So you left BIM. What was your first job?
It was Maccabees. Maccabees. Yeah, like day after graduating.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was a big one. Yeah, we did quite a bit. Well, I did a bit of touring with them. We did like 6 months, and I did the first album. I did like half of that with Ben Hillier, and we were at Moloko Studios in Elephant and Castle. It was all really exciting, you know. It's sort of like, yeah, graduate, and then yeah, I was sleeping on
straight in
Orlando's sofa and recording, and then yeah, we went on tour and supported Wolf Mother and the Fratellis, and it was mad. Just played
Amazing.
Brixton Academy, and you know, it was like everything I'd sort of dreamed of came in like 6 months.
How did you process that at the time? You know, you've just come out of university and you're already touring and recording. Did you just think, I've made it?
I don't know. Looking back, I don't think I really had time to think about it, because it was a hard gig and it was all quite quick as well. So it was kind of really having to concentrate, and nerves were definitely a thing, because it was like, yeah, I'd had to learn the drum parts quite quickly, and they're a very particular band. I think they wouldn't mind me saying that, but yeah, they've sort of had their set ways, and that's how they got as far as they did. But it was a hard gig, because wasn't just messing around and being like, hey, I'm on the road, let's get messed up, because we're, you know, rock and roll and all that business. It was cool, but yeah.
Every time I do a show and I watch the setup and I watch the sound check and then I watch the show, obviously, aside from the artist or the singer who was, you know, kind of running around on stage, I think drummers have such a difficult job, because not only do you have to lug all your gear, set up all your gear, it's so physical.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely. And I think, yeah, there's a lot to be said for looking after yourself on the road, which I'm probably not. I wasn't especially good at. But yeah, no, I think, you know, you have got to be really fit. And yeah, you really notice it. Like, I remember we did a gig. This was when I was playing with Kate Nash, and we went to Japan and we played up a mountain, and it was Fuji Rocks, and the air was so thin, and it was, yeah, we played for like an hour and 15 minutes, and I felt like I was going to die after it.
It was really hard.
Yeah, like needed oxygen after it, because it was just, yeah, that sort of lack of oxygen was not good. So yeah, you have to be fit, I think.
Okay, so moving on from Maccabees, when did you then get involved with Kate, or was there another step in between there?
No, it was all quite quick. It all sort of, everything fell into place. So, but yeah, Hugo, the guitarist of the Maccabees, he was friends with his now fiance, Laura Dockrill, and they were best friends. Kate and her were best friends. And it was like, oh, I've got this mate who needs a drummer. Can you go up to London? It was like a couple of days after. And I was like, yeah, I'll go and see what it's all about. And I went up to Hackney and rehearsed in a studio. I met her and I thought it was an audition. We ended up just rehearsing basically for 6 hours. And then she was like, cool, do you want to go on the road? And yeah, we went and did that first album and went round in a splitter van. It was me, her and a guy, Jay, on bass. And then the album sort of came around, and it was like, well, do you want to record it? And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, this is cool. Like, and it ended up being, yeah, recording an album with Paul Epworth, and it's got number one record, so it was pretty
cool.
One
of the biggest records of the past 10 years.
Yeah, it was great. It was a really big thing to be part of. You know, it was very cool, so...
So what advice would you give to people who are trying to, you know, you've just, it seems like you've had, you, what age were you at that point?
20. Yeah, 20 years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yes.
That's yeah. young.
Yeah, it was young. Yeah.
What advice would you give to session musicians trying to get a gig?
It's a really tough thing, but I think all I've ever said, and I think I sort of stand by, is that you've just got to be out there and sociable and get to the right gigs. You know, don't sort of think that you can't be part of a scene just because you're not part of it. Like, go to something mm-hmm. and get involved, and if you like the band, go and tell the band you like them, and yeah. you know,
make relationships.
Maybe exactly, go and make a relationship, and just yeah, don't be a gushing fan, but you know, just be sort of honest, and no one's any different to each other, so just try and get on a level, and you know, offer your services if you can do something, and things come around just by being involved. You
and just
know,
being there, yeah. It yeah. is. I do think once you crack into the session world, it's all about, I've got a mate or I know someone.
Yeah,
or, yeah. Different yeah. once you're in the circle, but I guess the difficult thing is kind of getting known in the session world. I guess.
Yeah, I think you know, like as a session drummer, it's good to go to like a studio and offer your services, because there's always going to be someone that needs drums on a track, or you know, something comes up, and then all of a sudden you do that and you do a good job and that's it, you're away really. You mm-hmm. know, it's sort of all coming together, but yeah.
Yeah. And so how long did you play with Kate for?
5-6 years.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I'm sure there were some great tours in there, great highlights,
some amazing stuff. Yeah I mean, we did some mad shows and we toured a lot. We went around the world and went to Australia and did Big Day Out. Had a really nice slot on that festival with like Bjork and Rage Against the Machine and Arcade Fire. And that was that. And at that point, I knew it was, you know, it was nuts, because it was all going well and the crowds were ridiculous. And I was aware of it then, especially because I'd written a lot of the drum parts. It wasn't quite as nerve wracking and fraught as the Maccabees learning someone else's. It was like I could enjoy it a bit, you know.
Yeah. Was it a nice crew? You know, it was kind of.
Yeah,
you know,
we had a good crew. We had some not so nice crew. But yeah, I don't think they'll ever
that's
listen to this.
Way.
So yeah, I don't really care, because they're in America and that's fine. But yeah, we had some not so nice people, but we had some lovely people, and I'm still friends with. I had a lovely drum tech the whole time, Simon, who looked after my drums and made sure they would look brand new every day. And yeah, it was good.
Wow. 6 years on the road with Kate Nash. That is a really long time. And it must have felt like kind of you'd done everything, but you actually went on to tour with lots of other musicians, right?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I had a little break, and then I did Lady Hawk, which came up again. I think I did her in the middle of Cake when she had the break from the first album. And then I looked after her again, and we did some really fun touring around Asia. And then Kate's booking agent, Angus from 13 Artists, who's a lovely guy and I've known for years, he got in touch. I think we went for lunch or something in Brighton. And again, it was, you know, about that, like people knowing people and being in the right place. And mm-hmm. he was like, oh, I might have a session for you. And then that night he called and was like, yeah, Paolo needs a drummer.
And Paolo Nutini.
Yeah, Paolo Nutini. Yeah. So I ended up going out on the road with Paolo Nutini, which was mad. And
was he Paolo Nutini at the time, or was he Paolo, a random kid from Scotland? Or was
no, he was very much Paolo Nutini. Like, yeah, we did Pyramid Stage at Glastonbury.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was big, like very big shows. So, yeah, it was great. It was insane. And that was, yeah, that was a bit like the Maccabees, though. It was like nerve wracking and fully on concentration mode the whole time.
Yeah, he's a muso, right?
Yeah, an amazing band and, yeah, a ridiculous lineup of musicians. And, yeah, it was great, you know, really, really good.
So you've played the Pyramid Stage at Glastonbury.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, yeah, I've done it. Well, I did it with Kate as well, but with Paolo was nuts, because it was like a mad slot. It was like in the evening and just before Coldplay, and it was really beautiful. And that was a moment. That was really cool.
Take me from, because I know you and I've always known you as a tour manager or yeah. a rep. So how did you get from being a session musician to working on the tour management side?
So I think when I was playing, I sort of always had my eye on everything. I think as a drummer, you're in quite a good position. You're up high, you can watch everything. But yeah, I sort of watched other people be tour managers, and I was always interested how it worked, because, you know, you've got long days where you're not doing much, so it's always nice to see how shows work. And I think that kind of that spurred me on, and that would maybe planted the seed that I wanted to be a tour manager and move to another role where I'm sort of, you know, in that capacity. So
yeah, it's clever, because I guess the, you know, it's difficult to be a drummer forever.
Absolutely. And I think I was aware of that, and I of course I loved it, but like I say, the nerves are something that I found over time, especially if you're like touring for 4 months. I didn't find it was great for me. You know, being on the road and, yeah, and having those constant nerves, it's like you come off the road and you're like, I don't feel sick anymore. Like, why is that? And it's like those, that's all gone. So having that, I thought it might be time for a change and just, you know, like we said, I've done a lot of things and ticked a lot of boxes that I'd aimed to tick. So I thought maybe it's time for a change. And yeah, it's been a good move. It's worked out really well because I've ended up, I'm still touring. I'm still seeing a lot of places, but I'm doing a role which I feel comfortable with because it's something I also think I've got a lot of skills at as well.
Yeah. So have you always been quite an organized person? Because I think tour managers need to be incredibly organized.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think that's something. Yeah. I've got probably chronic OCD, and yeah, I like to be organized and stay on top of things. And I think that's something which does, yeah, especially it does really help, you know.
Yeah. So you knew from your days on tour, you thought you were looking at the tour managers going, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we had a couple of dodgy ones across the way, you know, some amazing ones, but yeah, some not so good. And I think the combination of the two inspired me to think, right, I can take the good bits from them and, you know, ignore the bad bits and push them away. Because I think there's, you're quite aware as well when you're on the road of how someone can make you feel as well. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it was part of my experience that I wanted to make other people enjoy their time on the road.
Absolutely.
And make, you know, because even if it's a low budget tour, or it doesn't have to be a bad time, you know, like you don't have to suffer just because you're playing the dog and duck down in, I don't know, wherever, Putney or whatever. You can still enjoy the gig and you don't have to be an arsehole to people just because you're not making loads of money. Or, and I think that's something which a lot of people on the road kind of, they sort of enforce their bad feelings on you. Like we had a tour manager who just, when the gigs were bad, he would just make everyone feel bad. And it's like, well, it's no different to, you can't just change your mindset when you know we're playing to 10,000 people, because we're still all people on the road and have to get on and enjoy ourselves, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from the tour manager.
Yeah.
So for anybody who doesn't know, what does a tour manager do and what is the role of a tour manager on the road?
So tour manager, well, where do I start with? Yeah, so basically it will start with talking to management, agent, promoters. You'll get given a tour, you get given an idea of what the tour's about, and then you start preparing it, really. You start working out how can you make these dates happen, what's in what way can you get through these dates, and you know, what's the most cost effective way and safest way to get through these dates and make it all happen, and hopefully make a profit for the artist at the end of the run of shows based on the fee and how you're going to get around it.
I think it might surprise people that tour management starts with logistics, because they probably expect that the management do that they, or that the booking agent actually who books the shows give you an itinerary, but actually it all stems from tour manager.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you get a list of dates in Excel and it's like, right, you've got to make it happen, you know, however you can. So yeah, that's kind of it, really. So I'll tend to sit there with I always work from a computer, but I'll sit with a pad probably before I will go to my computer and just doodle, and I'll have maps next to me and I'll have, you know, calculator out, and I'll be looking at it, and it'll be a lot of scribbling before it starts going into a physical computer form, you know.
Yeah, and you're looking at things like hotels, travel.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which day you travel, are you going to keep the band in this specific town for one day or bring them to the next town?
Absolutely, yeah exactly. And looking at things like that, like, you know, do we want to stay in this town, is it going to be, you know, fun on a day off, or do we travel after the show overnight going to the next place? It's all those sort of things, but making it all link in so that it, you know, it all happens, really.
Yeah. And so then the second part of the job is actually going on the tour.
Absolutely. Yeah, going on the tour, getting people to go on the tour with you, making sure they get to the bus in time. Yeah, and making sure that happens and make sure that everyone's sort of safe on the road, really. And yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky with some acts and lots of lucky with others. You have some that make your life really hard and some that just want to get on and do the tour and make it happen. So yeah.
What's your favourite part about a tour?
My favourite bit's when the show's, you know, like 5 to 9. Show's about to start, whenever you can feel everyone's excited and the show's about to happen. I think that's probably my favourite bit of touring, is when the show's about to start, because there's, you know, there is a lot of waiting around or a lot of, you know, meetings, chats, conversations before the gig, and it's like we're all there to do the gig bit, really, you know.
There's a lot of travel, a lot of logistics, a lot of waiting around for a 90-minute show.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it's nice, you know, and I love taking a band to the stage and seeing their excitement and, you know, watching them do a show. It's great, you know. It's really a nice part of the tour.
Yeah, it's so cool because you've been there, you've been on both sides now, so you can really appreciate how a musician feels.
Yeah, absolutely. I just quite like having to stop on that line and not going over it now. Yeah.
And so what kind of advice would you give anybody listening or someone who wants to work in the music industry on how to get involved in a tour.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not playing in the band.
Yes, if you want to get involved in touring, there's lots of ways you can. I mean, it's one of those things where if you, you know, I mean, you're probably going to have to swallow your pride a bit and say, right, I'm not going to be the TM or I'm not going to be part of the band, but you can certainly, there's so many different roles on the road and, you know, I think you can get involved. Like, people always need a merch seller. People always need a tech or like a roadie or someone who's up for lifting gear. I mean, the amount of people I know that have started on tour where they just jumped in a van and were, you know, good and hands-on and helping their mates out, lifting gear and doing that sort of thing. And as you know, if they got caught the bug and they enjoyed it, then a lot of them are, you know, now big techs and on the road doing it at a level that, you know, we'd all want to be at, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I can think of a lot of people that have done that and done a good job at it, and you know, they're really at the top of their game now. So yeah, there's different ways in. It's
so you just say make yourself useful.
Yeah.
Get on the road somehow and learn on the job.
Absolutely. And like, even if you can't get on the road because there's no room in the bus, like, just it's making a bit of sacrifice every now and then. Like, you might have to get a train, which is going to cost a bit, but if you can get to the show and just be around, it's, you know, don't get in the way and don't be a problem. But at the same time, you know, if your mates are playing, I don't know, up in Newcastle or Liverpool or Manchester, just say, right, I'll pop up, I'll come up and see, you know, I'll be at the show, anything you need. And just being around it sort of encourages that activity, I think, and something will come of it because you're just there and involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's great advice, because yeah, it doesn't have to be the biggest show ever. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to apply to a show that's happening at the O2.
Yeah.
As you said, you can help out even if it's playing to 200 people. People always need someone to help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, you know, if you're about and it's just, yeah, keep plodding away at that. And then, yeah, something will come of it, because it's just, you'll find, and yeah, I could say, if you're useful to the band, or even if you're not useful to the band and they can't take you on the road, they'll recommend you to someone else. And just like that, it will start going.
Do you prefer smaller shows, bigger shows, mid-sized shows? Obviously, there's kind of different stresses that come with each of those. And I think,
yeah,
obviously playing big arena shows is really cool, and but it also comes with its own problems. And, you know, it's everything. When everything scales up, it gets a lot more complicated, because you suddenly have lights and you have production. And
yeah,
you kind of lose a little bit of the magic of a small venue. But
the magic does go a bit. But I think I do like big shows, just because you're guaranteed to have a big team and a lot of people on the road. And I think that's, you're in a good place then, because you're going to have, you know, a good team around you. I mean, I like the small shows, but there's chances are there's, yeah, a lot more likely to go wrong. And yeah, with the big shows, you're pretty much, if you're at that level, you know what's going on. You know who the truck drivers are. You know who the caterers are. You know who, you know. My favourite venue in London, probably in the world, is Brixton Academy, and that's 5,000. So it's not a huge arena show, but I just love that. That level of gig is also great, because that's where you're starting to get a bit of production, the team's getting a bit bigger, and everything's a bit more exciting. So, you know, when shows come in there, I really like doing gigs there. It's great.
As a manager, we sometimes have to book flights and book logistics, but it's often only one. What is the responsibility of booking so many flights, so yeah, many hotels? There's so many things that can go wrong. Is that nerve-wracking in itself?
Yeah, that is nerve-wracking. And I think, you know, that is something that I do find, and I always find, yeah, nerve-wracking. Like, even we had that tour with Gabrielle when we went to America, and there was a lot of flying and a lot of hotels.
Yeah.
And it was, at the end of the tour, it was just great just to get, like, we were there and it was like, okay, cool, nothing's happened. You know, and also as well, it's that constant thing of fear of flights being cancelled, because a couple of them were quite close, but it's all we could do with where we were. So you've got that constant, you know, plan B, plan C. What do we do if? Because there was talk of, oh, it's delayed and then it might get cancelled. You think, right, and then looking at other options, you know, can we get a car? Can we get, you know, how do we get there? So yeah, that's also the other thing, is just staying on your toes. And that, as a tour manager, you can't really go, well, okay, the flight's cancelled, we'll not do the gig. That's the thing. You've still got to try and do the show.
You always have to have a backup plan.
Yeah.
I think as a tour manager, you have to be so prepared.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you think your experience as a musician helps you as a tour manager?
Yeah, I think it does a lot. I think it massively does. I think that having that experience of playing a lot of shows, going through all of that bit, going here, there and everywhere, and all those sort of breaks and gaps, and yeah, I think it helps massively. I mean, it's imparting a little bit of that experience onto other people, you know, and explaining that if the situation they're in, this is happening. I mean, of course, that would come with being a tour manager the whole time, but I don't know many people that started out and got, you know, from day one and went, oh, I'm a tour manager. you've got to have that experience. And I think it does help because, you know, I've been that side, like you say, and it's being on the other side of the fence and going, well, you know, like, why are we waiting here? What's going on? You're like, you know, I can see both sides of the coin, which is a good thing, I think. And it's, yeah, putting people at ease and it helps. It does help.
Where did you learn the skills that you needed to become a tour manager? Or did you ever go out on the road as an assistant?
I think, that's a good question. I think a lot of that came from being a promoter rep, really, because obviously as a drummer, there wasn't much. I wasn't doing itineraries or, you know, that sort of logistics side of things, or the financial side, which is a big part of TMing. So
for anyone who doesn't know, what does a rep do and how are they different from a tour manager?
So a show rep is an interesting one because there's a lot of similarities to a tour manager in the sense that you do help the show run to time. You do make sure the band are getting to a place, you know, like they're not gone missing or that, and everyone's in a good state. And also you buy the rider for the band. So, you know, you're looking after them in that sense. So, yeah, as a show rep, you're the first one in, last one out, liaising with the tour manager, production manager and the venue. And, yeah, making sure the show happens as the promoter sees fit. And then at the end of the night, you do the financial side with the tour manager. So you'll go through all the figures and then you end up having an argument about towels and everyone falls out.
Having an argument about towels or a merch cut that you didn't think was happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Why are towels so expensive? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things. Some more expensive than others, but
and we don't mean actual towels, but whenever you play a show, there will always be, you're looking at the settlement and at the end there's like £50 on towels in the settlement that the band have to pay for. And they're never clean.
They're never clean. They always stink of beer. Yeah, I mean, very rarely.
Have you had many crazy requests from artists for things that go in their rider? Is it all pretty standard?
I don't know. I've been all right, really. People ask me that. I've been all right. I mean, I've not had anything wacky. I know lots of people that have, but I've sort of swerved that. I know friends have made had to make things like a cardboard cutout of that guy from Different Strokes. I had to do a cardboard cutout of him and all sorts of random stuff, like in a football kit, local football kit. And I've had like funny foods and stuff, like weird hams that I've had to go to like Harrods for. But then I bought it for a band and they were really insistent. Then I came in to say goodbye and it was just on the floor upside down getting walked over. It was like, well, yeah, you really needed that ham that you called about the night before. So I don't know.
That's the kind of less fun side, I think.
The more
logistical side. So what are the parts about touring and being on the road that people would not know about? Or what are the things that you do when, let's say, when you're traveling? Can you just talk a little bit about the logistics of a tour, bits that you like and the bits that you don't like?
Well, logistics change. I mean, it depends really how you're going around. But obviously, I think really with touring, it's important. I find it's really important to try and do something that's not the tour if you can. Like, you know, if you can get up, like in Japan, I remember I got up early and went to the fish market, you know, and try and see something. If you've got time in the day, like try and do something other than the tour, just because, you know, that too often. And I've done tours where you get back and everyone's like, what's that place like? What's that place like? You're like, I don't know. It's
Didn't
a dressing room and it's a stage and it's a hotel room that all end up, you know, they all end up looking the same. And I think it's really important to try if you can to, and I think as an artist, or, you know, artists are quite lucky in that sense. If they're not doing tons of promo, they can try and get out. But as a tour manager, it's quite difficult to find that time. So I think for me, I would just try and find that time to get out the venue and try and see a bit of the world if possible.
Because,
otherwise you can just end up being in Groundhog Day over and over. So
And do you like touring? Do you like that, you know, there's a lot of people obviously find it difficult because there's no routine. You, like you said, you can't always get to see the place that you're going to. You just see the venue and sound check, and you kind of become part of a bubble when you're on a tour and you don't really keep in contact with the outside world. But is it something that you enjoy or that you can manage, you know, after all these years of doing it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I do enjoy it. And I think I love the aspect of, I mean, I really like meeting people. So it's nice to go around the country, even just going around our country, meeting people is, you know, you wouldn't believe, like, the characters you meet and how different it can be on an hour's drive in our country, just meeting different people. But yeah, I love that aspect of meeting people. And generally, like 9 times out of 10, everyone at venues is pretty cool because they work in music. So you're pretty much going to have a decent set of people you're working with every day, you know, providing, you know, you get the odd one or two that don't work out. But pretty much you're going to meet some cool people at the venue and end up, like a lot of people end up becoming friends because it's that quick transient thing. But a lot of people I've met and I see them at a festival or see them around, and then, you know, you end up having a beer or you end up making a lot of friends quite quickly because that's
kind
of... And
then you see them at the next festival.
Exactly. You see them at a festival or, yeah, or they come to a show and you're like, oh, you're that guy from that, you know, or... Yeah, and it's cool, you know, it's... And I like that aspect because it's very social. It's a big social thing. I mean, a lot of it is just talking to people and getting situations to work out. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've been to some absolutely ridiculous places.
Yeah. No, I have. I've been really lucky. Really lucky. I mean, in fact, when I wasn't even playing with the Maccabees, I was doing photography because I just decided I was going to be a photographer for a bit. I went to Malawi with them and went
wow.
to... Yeah, we did a festival called Lake of Stars. I don't know if it's still going, but it was a festival in Malawi and it was just incredible. Like, yeah, going to Africa and... Yeah, seeing the boys playing out there was just amazing on this edge of this lake. But then getting to go around that area. And in fact, it was my mum was like born about an hour away from where we were. So it was just amazing to be there and see it and things
something
like that.
Something that you
mad.
Might not have done.
No, I don't think I ever would have. I probably never would have gone there, really, if I wasn't working. So.
And so what are your ambitions or where would you like to go from here? Do you think you're going to stay in tour management for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, I'd like to stay in it. I think as I'm getting older, I'm starting to see the scope of maybe getting like a team of tour managers and maybe starting like a company of tour managers and having like a group of people that we can work with and, yeah, creating like an operation where maybe I don't have to be...
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
A collective.
Yeah, a collective, yeah. And don't have to be on the road perhaps all the time. So maybe it's a thing of... the work comes in and sharing the work around, maybe doing the advancing. Because I do like advancing the shows and doing the itineraries and setting those shows up like that. So maybe that's something I've been thinking about recently is staying within it, but maybe just doing the logistical side and letting someone else do the road bit just so you can get up a bit of time where you are based, a bit more stationary, just to sort of, yeah, try and be a bit grounded every now and then.
Try.
Yeah, try to be.
but you feel like music... Music is it. What about drumming? Do you think you'll ever...
Oh, yeah, I'd love to go back to playing drums, like, properly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did a session, year before, with Paolo Nutini again, and we went and played on Necker Island for Richard Branson, and it was ridiculous, and I was like, yeah, maybe this could be a thing again. But
if every show was like that.
Exactly, yeah. With drumming, I'd love to do something where it's a band thing, where I'm not session, just so it's something that's mine, because that's all I've ever really done, is apart from Blue Riff back in 1997.
Okay, so one question I want to ask you that wish I asked at the beginning. When you tell people about your job, do they understand what you do, or how do you explain your job, and what do your friends think about it and your family think about it?
Yeah, I sort of have to explain it in layman's terms, really. I think with tour management, I always just say it's logistics, it's about keeping people safe and about getting them from A to B without any issues, really. And I think that's kind of, I just keep it to that, and then they're like, oh, okay, yeah, fine.
And when you're out in crazy places all over the world, do your friends, they must be so in awe or kind of like, wow.
They certainly were when I started. I think they're a bit bored of it now, really. They're, you know, if they haven't seen me for a week, they're like, well, where have you been now? Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's it for today's episode. A big thank you to Elliot Andrews for joining me today and for chatting about the world of tour management and being a session musician. I've known Elliot for years and I had no idea he's played the Pyramid Stage twice. Amazing. Thank you to Soho Radio for allowing us to record here, to my producer, Juliet Nichols from Pineapple Audio Production, and thank you to Sunny for the music that you've heard in this episode. Goodbye.